Welcome, dear listener. What if the only thing standing between you and the victories you crave is understanding how to truly push past your own limits? This is the core question we ignite today. Feel that gnawing frustration? That sense your potential remains stubbornly untapped while others surge ahead? We confront that head-on. It is not because things are difficult that we do not dare. It is because we do not dare that they are difficult, Seneca reminds us. This journey is your antidote. Throughout this powerful experience, we make you a profound promise. You will master the exact strategies to ignite unwavering inner drive and propel yourself towards consistent, meaningful wins. You will dismantle procrastination, conquer self-doubt, and forge an unshakable mindset. By the final chapter, you will possess more than just knowledge. You'll hold the master key to sustained self-propulsion. You will emerge equipped with the unshakable conviction and the practical tools to command your efforts, dominate your goals, and claim the life you were meant to win. Stay until the end, and step into the arena armed with unstoppable momentum. The ultimate victory, your transformed self, awaits. Chapter 1. How to push yourself to win in your life, with ruthless goal setting. Let us begin by dispensing with the fantasies that have kept you chained to mediocrity. You are not here to learn about gentle wishing or passive dreaming. You are here to learn how to conquer. The world is filled with individuals who carry around vague, comfortable desires like security blankets. They want to be successful. They hope to get in shape. They wish they could be happier. These are not goals. They are clouds of smoke, formless and fleeting, offering the pleasant illusion of ambition without the demanding price of clarity. They are the language of the spectator, not the victor. A vague wish is a prayer whispered into the void, and the universe does not reward ambiguity. Winning is not an accident. It is not a lottery ticket you stumble upon. Victory, in any meaningful area of your life, is engineered. It is constructed with the cold, hard materials of precision, focus, and an unwavering commitment to a defined outcome. The foundation of this entire construction, the concrete slab upon which every future success is built, is the act of ruthless goal setting. Understand what we mean by ruthless. This is not a call to be cruel to others. It is a command to be brutally, unflinchingly honest with yourself. It is the practice of taking a scalpel to your own life and cutting away every shred of ambiguity, every comfortable excuse, every maybe and someday that has been poisoning your potential. It is about looking in the mirror and refusing to accept the soft, palatable lies you have been telling yourself. Ruthless means you define your target with such piercing clarity that there is no room for misinterpretation or retreat. It means you are done negotiating with your own weakness. The average person avoids this process because clarity is terrifying. A specific goal can be specifically failed. A measurable target creates a measurable shortcoming. It is far more comfortable to live in the fog of "I'm trying my best" than to stand in the harsh, revealing light of a specific objective and a ticking clock. That comfort is a cage. Today, you will learn how to break out of it, not by finding a key, but by smashing the bars with the sheer force of a well-defined purpose. The first enemy you must execute is ambiguity. Vague goals are the assassins of achievement. Think about it. How do you create a plan to arrive at a destination called somewhere better? You cannot. How do you measure your progress toward a finish line named more money? You do not. Your mind, for all its incredible power, cannot execute a command it does not understand. It requires a clear, defined, unambiguous instruction. Without it, your energy is scattered, your focus is fragmented, and your efforts are diluted into nothingness. You push yourself to win by giving your mind a clear and direct order. You must eradicate phrases like, "I want to," and replace them with the steel-enforced declaration of, "I will achieve X by Y date." This is not a game of semantics. It is a fundamental shift from passive desire to active command. You are no longer a passenger in your own life. You are the pilot, and you have a specific set of coordinates locked into your navigation system. This brings us to the first pillar of ruthless goal setting. Absolute microscopic specificity. It is time to stop thinking in headlines and start thinking in high-definition detail. What does your victory actually look like? Do not say, "I want to start a successful business." That is a worthless statement. What kind of business? What product or service will it sell? Who are your exact customers? What does successful mean in precise, numerical terms? Is it $100,000 in annual profit? Is it $10 million in revenue? Is it capturing 50% of the market share in your specific niche? A ruthless goal sounds like this. I will launch an e-commerce brand selling high-performance athletic apparel, generating $150,000 in net profit within 24 months. See the difference? One is a daydream, the other is a target. This level of specificity must be applied to every domain. Do not say, "I want to get fit." Define it. "I will reduce my body fat to 12% and be able to run 5 kilometers in under 25 minutes by December 31st. Do not say, "I want to write a book." Define it. "I will complete a 90,000-word science fiction novel and secure a literary agent by the end of next year." You must define your objective with such brutal clarity that you could explain it to a child, and they would understand exactly what you are trying to do. This process forces you to confront your own desires and make concrete choices. It moves the goal from the realm of fantasy into the world of project management. It becomes real, tangible, and therefore achievable. You must be able to see it, feel it, and taste it. The more real it is in your mind, the more inevitable it becomes in your reality. The second pillar is measurement. Peter Drucker, a titan of management theory, famously stated, "If you can't measure it, you can't improve it." This is an unbreakable law of achievement. You must attach hard numbers to your goals. Measurement is the feedback system that tells you if you are winning or losing on a daily basis. It transforms your journey from a blind stumble in the dark into a calculated advance on a fixed position. It allows you to track progress, identify problems, and adjust your strategy accordingly. Without measurement, you are flying blind, operating on pure emotion and guesswork. A winner does not guess. A winner knows. Let's return to the business goal. If your target is $150,000 in profit in 2 years, You can break that down. That is $75,000 per year. That is $6,250 per month. Now you have a monthly target. How many units do you need to sell to hit that number? What is your required conversion rate? How much website traffic do you need? Suddenly, your massive, intimidating goal has been deconstructed into a set of key performance indicators, or KPIs, that you can track every single day. You no longer worry about the $150,000. You focus with laser intensity on hitting your daily traffic goal and your weekly sales target. You push yourself to win by focusing on the process metrics you can control, knowing that if you consistently hit those numbers, the final outcome is a mathematical certainty. This is how you replace hope with strategy. The third pillar is the unyielding deadline. A goal without a deadline is nothing more than a wish with no energy behind it. It is a someday project, and someday is a date that never appears on any calendar. A deadline is the catalyst that transforms inertia into action. It creates a sense of urgency and a productive pressure that forces you to focus and execute. It is the ticking clock in the background of your mind that reminds you that time is finite and must not be wasted. When you set a hard, non-negotiable deadline, you are making a solemn promise to yourself. You are drawing a line in the sand. You are declaring that on this specific day, you will have achieved your objective. Setting a deadline is an art. It must be realistic enough to be believable, but challenging enough to be inspiring. If you set a goal to make $1 million in a week with no resources, your mind will reject it as a fantasy. If you give yourself 10 years to achieve something that should take one, there will be no urgency to act now. You must find the sweet spot that creates tension, the kind of tension that pulls you forward. Once that date is set, it must be treated as sacred. It is not a suggestion. It is not a guideline. It is an appointment with your own success that you are not permitted to miss. This single act of setting a firm deadline separates the professional from the amateur. The amateur works when they feel inspired. The professional works because the deadline is approaching. The fourth pillar is the creation of a detailed action plan. A goal, no matter how specific and time-bound, is useless without a clear plan of attack. You do not achieve a great objective through one giant leap. You achieve it by taking hundreds or even thousands of small, consistent steps. Your job is to identify every single one of those steps in advance. You must become a master of reverse engineering. Start at your deadline with your goal fully achieved and work backward. To be there, where did you need to be 1 month prior? To be at that point, what had to be accomplished in the week before? To hit that weekly milestone, what specific concrete actions must you take today? This process deconstructs an overwhelming mountain into a simple series of manageable steps. Your action plan is your daily roadmap. It tells you exactly what to do when you wake up in the morning. It eliminates the need for decision-making and the paralysis that comes with it. You do not have to think about what to do. You simply have to consult the plan and execute the next step. This is where military precision becomes essential. Your plan should be broken down into non-negotiable daily and weekly tasks. These are the actions that, if completed with relentless consistency, make the achievement of your goal inevitable. You push yourself to win by focusing all your willpower not on the massive final goal, but on winning the day by completing today's assigned tasks. Win enough days, and you cannot help but win the war. Chapter 2. Forge discipline. Don't find motivation. How to push yourself to win in your life through unbreakable routine. Let us now discard the most pervasive and crippling lie in the entire lexicon of personal achievement, the myth of motivation. You have been told a comforting falsehood, a story whispered by the mediocre to justify their own inaction. The story is that to achieve greatness, you must first feel a spark of inspiration. You must wait for the muse to sing, for the wave of energy to carry you, for that magical, emotional state called motivation to descend upon you like a divine gift. This is a dangerous delusion. Motivation is a fair-weather friend. It is a fleeting, unreliable emotion that comes and goes with your mood, your energy levels, and the alignment of the stars. It is a sugar rush, a cheap high that feels wonderful in the moment, but inevitably leads to a crash, leaving you stranded and further from your goal than when you started. Basing your pursuit of victory on the whims of motivation is like building a fortress on shifting sand. It is an act of profound self-sabotage. The winners in this world, the true architects of their own reality, understand a fundamental truth. Motivation is for amateurs. Professionals, warriors, and champions rely on something far more powerful, far more resilient, and far more real. They rely on discipline. So, let us be clear. Forget about motivation. Banish the word from your vocabulary. Stop searching for it. Stop waiting for it. And stop using its absence as an excuse. Your feelings are irrelevant. Your mood is not a factor in the equation of your success. The only thing that matters is what you do, and discipline is the engine of action. While the dreamer waits to feel like it, the winner builds the habit of doing it anyway. Discipline is not something you find, it is something you forge. Picture a blacksmith in the searing heat of his workshop. He takes a piece of raw, unformed iron. This is your intention, your vague desire to win. It is shapeless and weak. He does not hope for it to become a sword. He thrusts it into the fire, into the crucible of difficulty and resistance. The heat is the struggle, the burning desire to quit, the pain of effort. Then he pulls the glowing metal from the flames and places it on the anvil of reality. He raises his hammer and begins to strike. Every swing of that hammer is a single, conscious act of will. It is getting out of bed when the alarm screams. It is going to the gym when your body aches. It is writing the page when your mind is blank. It is making the call when you are terrified of rejection. Every single strike is a choice. It is a decision to impose your will upon the raw material of your potential, to beat it into a shape of your own choosing. This is not a gentle process. It is violent, loud, and demanding. It requires heat, pressure, and thousands upon thousands of repeated, deliberate blows. This is how discipline is created. It is the weapon you build yourself, piece by piece, every single day, through relentless and often monotonous effort. How do you wield this weapon? How do you bring this forged discipline to bear upon the battlefield of your goals? The answer lies in the creation of an unbreakable routine. Your routine is the physical manifestation of your discipline. It is the operating system for your ambition. A computer with a weak, buggy operating system will crash no matter how powerful its hardware. Likewise, a person with a powerful goal but no routine to support it will inevitably fail. Your routine is what automates success. It takes your most important, non-negotiable actions, the very actions that lead directly to your ruthless goal as defined in the previous chapter, and embeds them into the fabric of your day. It removes the need for constant decision-making, which is one of the greatest drains on your willpower. You no longer have to decide if you are going to work on your goal today. The decision has already been made. It is simply part of the schedule. It is what you do. You must design this routine with the precision of an engineer. It must be structured to serve your ambition. This begins with a morning ritual. The first hour of your day sets the tone for everything that follows. The amateur rolls out of bed, grabs their phone, and immediately floods their mind with the reactive, distracting noise of the world. The winner, however, controls their morning with absolute authority. They rise before the world can make its demands on them. They hydrate. They move their body. They spend time in focused thought, reviewing their goals, and preparing their mind for the day's battle. Their morning routine is a pre-flight checklist that ensures all systems are primed for peak performance. It is a declaration that they are in command, not the chaotic whims of the outside world. Equally important is the evening routine. The amateur collapses at the end of the day into a stupor of cheap entertainment, letting the day bleed away without lesson or purpose. The winner ends their day with intention. They conduct an after-action review. What did I accomplish today? Where did I fall short? What did I learn? What is the single most important objective for tomorrow? They prepare their clothes, their meals, their workspace for the following day. This simple act eliminates friction and makes starting tomorrow's work almost effortless. They are laying the groundwork for a future victory, while the rest of the world is passively consuming content. This bookending of your day with powerful routines creates a controlled environment where success is the most likely outcome. Within this structure, you must build the core of your work, impenetrable blocks of deep, focused effort. This is where you work on your primary objective with zero distractions. This is not multitasking. This is not checking email while pretending to write a report. This is a sacred, scheduled appointment with your goal. You turn off your phone. You close the unnecessary tabs. You lock the door. For that 90-minute or 2-hour block, you and your work are the only things that exist in the universe. It is in these focused sprints, repeated day after day, that real progress is made. This is where the hammer strikes the steel. Now you will hear this and perhaps recoil at the language. You will think, chain yourself to it. This sounds like a prison. You are right. It is a prison. It is a prison for your weaker self. It is a cage for the procrastinator, the excuse maker, and the undisciplined child that lives inside all of us. You are locking that part of you away so that the warrior, the creator, and the champion can finally get to work without interruption. These chains of discipline will grant you the ultimate freedom. Freedom from your own moods, freedom from your own laziness, and the freedom to achieve what you truly desire. The paradox is that the most disciplined people are the freest. They are not slaves to their impulses. They are the masters of their own lives, and their routine is the tool of their mastery. You push yourself to win by joyfully and willingly locking yourself into a system that guarantees your success. The true test of this system, the moment where discipline is truly forged, comes when you do not want to do it. It will happen. There will be days when you are tired, sick, frustrated, and filled with doubt. The fire of inspiration will be nothing more than cold, dead ash. Your mind will conjure 1,000 brilliant, compelling reasons why you should take the day off, why you deserve a break, why it will not matter if you just skip it this one time. This is the moment of truth. This is the battle. Motivation has long since abandoned you. Hope is a distant memory. All you have left is the cold, hard steel of your discipline and the simple binary choice before you. Will you honor your commitment, or will you surrender to your weakness? You push yourself to win by showing up on these days. You do it especially on these days. You drag your tired body to the gym. You force your weary mind to write one more paragraph. You pick up the phone, even when your stomach is churning with anxiety. You honor the routine, not because you feel like it, but because you said you would. Each time you perform the action in defiance of your feelings, you are casting a vote for the person you want to become. You are strengthening the muscle of your will. You are teaching your mind and body that your commitment is not negotiable. It is not dependent on circumstances or emotions. It is law. And over time, something incredible begins to happen. The resistance gets weaker. The voice of doubt becomes quieter. The act of showing up becomes more automatic. You are not just building a business or a better body. You are building a new identity. This brings us to the grinding, unglamorous heart of victory. Consistency. We are conditioned to look for the quantum leap, the big break, the one heroic effort that changes everything. This is a fantasy. Greatness is not born from a single act of heroism. It is accumulated through thousands of small, forgotten acts of discipline. It is the result of a relentless, stubborn consistency. A single workout will not transform your body. A single session of writing will not produce a novel, but 100 workouts, 1,000 pages written one at a time. This is what creates masterpieces. Consistency is the force multiplier of your efforts. It is the principle of compounding interest applied to your personal growth. Think of water carving its way through solid rock to create a canyon. It does not do so with one powerful blast. It does so with the steady, persistent drip, drip, drip of single drops over millennia. Your daily routine is that drip. Each day you follow it, you are making a microscopic cut into the stone of your limitations. Chapter 3. Failure is data, not a death sentence. How to push yourself to win in your life by leveraging your losses. Let us speak of the one thing you have been trained your entire life to avoid. Let us speak of the specter that haunts your ambition, the ghost that paralyzes your will and strangles your best intentions in their crib. Let us speak of failure. From your earliest days, you were taught to fear it. Red ink on a test paper, a stumble in a sporting event, a rejection from a desired group. Each instance was presented as a small death, a verdict on your capability, a stain on your permanent record. You were conditioned to see failure as a final judgment, a wall at the end of a path. This is the greatest lie you have ever been told. It is a lie designed to keep you safe, small, and stagnant. Today, we burn that lie to the ground. You will fail. Let that statement sink into your bones. It is not a possibility. It is a guarantee. If you are pushing yourself toward any goal that is worth a damn, you will be rejected. You will miscalculate. You will invest your heart and soul into a project, and you will watch it crumble into dust. You will fall flat on your face in front of the world. Good. Every single time it happens, your first internal response should be, good. This is not an invitation to masochism. It is the first step in a radical mental reprogramming. It is the defiant roar of a warrior who understands that a battle scar is not a mark of defeat, but a testament to having been in the fight. Failure is not the end of your journey. Failure is the journey. It is the brutal, unforgiving, and absolutely essential curriculum for winning. The primary reason failure feels like a death sentence is because you have mistakenly fused your identity to your outcomes. Your ego, that fragile and demanding tyrant in your mind, has convinced you that when your project fails, you are a failure. When your pitch is rejected, you are a reject. When you lose, you are a loser. This is the poison that paralyzes. It is not the setback itself that destroys people. It is the shame that follows. It is the internal narrative of inadequacy, the endless loop of self-recrimination that convinces you to retreat, to hide, to never risk such humiliation again. The first and most critical action you must take in leveraging your losses is to perform a surgical separation of self from outcome. The strategy failed, but you are not the strategy. The event was a failure, but you are not the event. You are the scientist, and the failed experiment is simply a new piece of data. Your worth is not on the line. Your worth is immutable. Only your approach is being tested. Once you have cauterized the wound to your ego, you can begin the real work. You must transform yourself from a victim of your circumstances into a cold-blooded analyst of your performance. A loss is a gold mine of information, but you cannot extract the gold while you are drowning in the emotion of the cave-in. Therefore, the first step is to discard the emotion. Acknowledge it. Feel the anger, the frustration, the disappointment. Give it a brief, finite window to exist. Then, you must consciously and deliberately set it aside. A winner does not make strategic decisions in a fit of rage or a spiral of despair. You must achieve a state of clinical detachment. You must look upon the wreckage of your recent defeat not as a tragedy, but as a fascinating mechanical problem to be solved. This is where you conduct what the military calls an after-action review. It is a brutally honest, blame-free analysis of a single question. What happened? This review has four distinct parts. First, you must clearly state the intended outcome. What was the specific, measurable goal you were trying to achieve? Revisit the ruthless clarity of your objective. Second, you must state the actual outcome. What really happened? Do not sugarcoat it. Do not soften the blow. State the facts of the failure in plain, unvarnished language. I intended to sign 5 new clients this month. The actual outcome is that I signed 0 and lost 1 existing client. The truth, in its rawest form, is your only starting point. Third, and most importantly, you must analyze the gap between intent and outcome. What caused this failure? This requires a level of honesty that is deeply uncomfortable for most people. You must dig past the surface-level excuses. It is not enough to say, the market was bad, or the competition was too strong. These are victim statements. You must turn the spotlight back on yourself. Where did your plan fail? Was your initial assumption incorrect? Did you lack a critical skill? Did you fail in your execution through procrastination or a lack of discipline? Did you misread the audience? Did you quit too soon? You must list every possible cause with a relentless focus on the factors that were within your control. Even if an external event was a major contributor, your analysis must focus on your response to that event. Perhaps the plan was flawless, but it was too rigid to adapt to changing conditions. That lack of adaptation is the lesson. That is the data. Fourth, you must distill this analysis into a single, powerful lesson. Out of all the reasons for the failure, what is the one core piece of intelligence that you can carry forward? What is the critical insight you have purchased with your pain? This lesson is the gold you have been digging for. It could be, my product is solving a problem that the customer does not actually care about. It might be, my sales skills are inadequate for this price point and I need to seek professional training. Or it could be, I am not resilient enough and I allowed a small early setback to derail my momentum for the rest of the month. Find the primary lesson. Write it down. This is the data point that will inform your next attack. This is the knowledge that transforms a loss into leverage. With the data extracted, the final step is to forge a superior strategy. Adaptation is the hallmark of a survivor, and winning is the ultimate form of survival. Your failure has shown you a way that does not work. Your duty now is to architect a way that will. This is not about trying again. It is about attacking again, but with a new plan, with superior intelligence, with a strategy that has been stress-tested by reality. If your failure was a lack of skill, your new plan must include a non-negotiable schedule for acquiring that skill. If your failure was a flawed product, your new plan must detail the specific changes you will make based on the feedback the market has given you. You do not simply get back on the horse. You study why you fell off. You adjust your saddle. You improve your balance. And then you get back on with a new understanding of how to ride. Every loss, when properly analyzed, provides the exact blueprint for your next victory. This entire process is how you build resilience. Resilience is not a personality trait you are born with. It is a muscle. It is forged in the fire of getting knocked down and forcing yourself to stand back up over and over and over again. The first time you fail, the pain is immense, and the act of rising again feels impossible. The second time, the pain is still there, but you have a flicker of memory. You remember that you survived it once before. By the tenth time, a failure is no longer a cataclysmic event. It is a familiar, though unwelcome, part of the process. You develop a callus on your soul. The impact still stings, but it no longer shatters you. A winner pushes themselves to win by understanding that the game is not about never falling. The game is about who can get back up the fastest, learn the quickest, and get back in the fight the smartest. It is about getting up one more time than you are knocked down. Eventually, you can achieve a state of mind that seems insane to the average person. You can move from fearing failure to actively seeking it. The comfort zone is the place where ambitions go to die. It is a place of safety, but also a place of absolute stagnation. True growth, true progress, and true victory only exist at the edge of your current abilities. And when you operate on that edge, you will inevitably slip. If you are not failing on a regular basis, it is a sign that you are not pushing yourself hard enough. You are playing it safe. You are aiming too low. A failure becomes a badge of honor. It is proof that you had the courage to attempt something difficult, that you dared to operate at your limits. You push yourself to win by intentionally taking on challenges that have a high probability of temporary defeat, because you know that each defeat is a masterclass in how to achieve the ultimate victory. Stop seeing your losses as the end of the story. They are merely plot twists, moments of conflict that make the eventual triumph more meaningful. Thomas Edison's quote is not just a clever reframing. It is the literal mindset of a champion. Every no you receive, every door that is slammed in your face, every plan that goes up in smoke, is simply another discovery of a way that does not work. You are not failing. You are gathering data. You are not losing. You are learning. You are eliminating the wrong paths so that you can more clearly see the right one. Your past failures are not anchors weighing you down. They are a library of strategic intelligence that you alone possess. It is the most valuable asset you have. Your duty is to study it, to learn from it, and to use it to inform a more intelligent, more powerful, and more relentless assault on your goals. That is how you leverage your losses. This is how you push yourself to win in your life. Chapter 4. How to push yourself to win in your life. By conquering fear and doubt. Let us speak of the twin parasites that have fed on your ambition for far too long. Fear and doubt. They are the ghosts in your machine. The whispers in the dark that have paralyzed your will and kept you a prisoner in the shallow end of your potential. You have been told a lie. You have been sold the fantasy that the brave, the successful, and the victorious are somehow devoid of fear. You look at the titans of industry, the champions of sport, the artists who change the world, and you imagine them to be a different species, immune to the cold sweat and the racing heart that you know so well. This is a comforting lie, because it absolves you of responsibility. If they are built differently, then your inaction is not your fault. It is simply your nature. Today, we burn that lie to the ground. The truth is this: courage does not exist in the absence of fear. Courage is the conscious, deliberate decision to advance directly into the teeth of it. Fear is not your enemy. It is not a character flaw. It is a primal, biological inheritance designed for a single purpose: to keep you alive. When your ancient ancestor saw the shadow of a predator in the tall grass, fear flooded his system with adrenaline and cortisol, preparing him to either fight for his life or flee to safety. It was a magnificent survival tool. The problem is that this ancient, hardwired alarm system cannot distinguish between the threat of a saber-toothed tiger and the threat of asking for a promotion, starting a business, or speaking in front of a crowd. Your body reacts with the same primal panic. Your heart pounds, your palms sweat, your mind screams, "Danger!" It is trying to save you, but in the context of modern life and ambitious goals, it is saving you from the very experiences that are required for your growth. Fear is not a stop sign. It is a biological misinterpretation. It is a compass pointing directly toward the thing you must do next. The feeling of fear is the signal that you are standing on the precipice of your own expansion. Then there is doubt, fear's more insidious and intelligent twin. While fear is a raw, visceral, physical reaction, doubt is a sophisticated, internal narrative. Doubt is the voice that whispers, "You are not good enough. You do not have what it takes. Others are more qualified, more talented, more deserving. You will fail, and when you do, you will be exposed as a fraud." Doubt takes the raw emotion of fear and weaves it into a compelling story of your own inadequacy. It is the most destructive form of self-sabotage, because it feels like rational, critical thinking. It masquerades as wisdom, as prudence, as a realistic assessment of your own limitations. But it is not truth. Doubt is a hypothesis. It is a theory about your own potential that has not yet been subjected to the rigors of real-world testing. You have been treating your self-doubt as a final verdict when it is merely an unproven accusation. The greatest mistake you can make is to wait for these feelings to vanish. You are waiting for a day that will never come. You are waiting to feel confident before you start the business. You are waiting to feel brave before you make the difficult phone call. You are waiting to feel certain before you take the risk. You will wait your entire life. The feeling of confidence is not the prerequisite for action. It is the byproduct of it. Courage is not a state of being you achieve. It is a choice you make over and over again in the face of your own terror. As Twain so brilliantly stated, it is resistance and mastery, not absence. You resist the impulse to retreat. You master the emotion by refusing to let it dictate your behavior. You feel the fear, you hear the doubt, you acknowledge their presence, and then you take the step forward anyway. This is the single most important practice of anyone who has ever achieved anything of significance. Action is the universal antidote. Fear and doubt thrive in the vacuum of inaction. The more you hesitate, the more you analyze, the more you ruminate, the larger the monster of fear grows in your mind. You play out 1,000 failure scenarios, each one more vivid and catastrophic than the last. Your doubt solidifies from a whisper into a roar. This is the paralysis of analysis. The only way to break this vicious cycle is to move. You must take a physical, tangible step, no matter how small, toward the thing that you fear. The moment you act, the dynamic shifts. You are no longer the passive victim of your anxiety. You are the protagonist confronting the challenge. Action provides new information. It gives you data. The situation you imagined in your head is almost never as terrible as the reality. The rejection you feared might turn into a not right now. The failure you anticipated might reveal a flaw in your plan that you can now correct. Action transforms the terrifying unknown into a manageable set of known variables. Therefore, you must become a practitioner of discomfort. You must intentionally and strategically move toward the things that scare you. Your fear is a map to your own personal treasure. Is there a conversation you have been avoiding? That is the conversation you must have today. Is there a project you have been putting off because you feel intimidated by its scale? That is the project you must start this morning. You push yourself to win by systematically desensitizing yourself to fear. It is like building a muscle. The first time you lift a heavy weight, it is painful and difficult. But the more you do it, the stronger you become. The same is true for courage. The first time you take a risk, it is terrifying. But the more you act in the face of fear, the more you prove to yourself that you can survive it. You build your mental toughness not by reciting affirmations in the mirror, but by collecting a portfolio of experiences where you were scared and acted anyway. This does not mean you should be reckless. There is a vast difference between taking a calculated risk and being a fool. A fool closes their eyes, leaps off the cliff, and hopes for the best. A winner stands at the edge of the cliff, calculates the trajectory, assesses the landing zone, and understands the potential consequences. They ask, "What is the worst possible outcome here?" They look that outcome directly in the eye. Can I survive it? Can I recover from it? In most cases, the answer is yes. The failure you fear is rarely fatal. It might be embarrassing. It might be financially costly. It might be emotionally painful. But it is survivable. Once you accept the worst-case scenario, it loses its power over you. You have taken away its primary weapon, which is the terror of the unknown. You can then make a clear, strategic decision based not on fear, but on the potential for reward versus the acceptable risk. This is how you must reframe the concept of failure. Failure is not the opposite of success. It is a critical component of it. Every time you fail, you have not been defeated. You have simply gathered data. You have discovered a way that does not work. You have learned a valuable lesson that brings you one step closer to the way that does. The only true failure is the failure to try, the failure to act, the failure to risk. The person who has never failed is the person who has never done anything. You must cultivate an aggressive desire to get out there and fail, to make mistakes, to get messy. Every no you receive is one step closer to a yes. Every flawed attempt is a necessary iteration on the path to a masterpiece. When you strip failure of its emotional charge and view it as simple, neutral feedback, you liberate yourself to take the massive action required to win. Mastering your fear is an active, ongoing process. It is a battle you must choose to fight every single day. When the voice of doubt begins to whisper, you must learn to challenge it. Ask it for evidence. Where is the proof that I am not good enough? Where is the proof that I will fail? You will find that your doubt rarely has concrete evidence. It deals in vague, emotional generalizations. You must counter its narrative with the facts of your own past efforts and successes, no matter how small. Remind yourself of every time you were scared and acted anyway. This is your personal arsenal of courage. You build your case for your own competence, one action at a time. Your victory is waiting for you, but it is encamped on the other side of your fear. It will not come to you. You must advance and claim it. You must accept that fear and doubt will be your constant companions on this journey. They are the price of admission for a life of ambition. Do not mistake their presence for a sign that you are on the wrong path. Their presence is the sign that you are on exactly the right one. You are pushing your boundaries. You are challenging your limits. You are refusing to settle. So feel the fear, acknowledge the doubt, and then take a deep breath, square your shoulders, and push yourself forward. Make the call, take the risk, embrace the discomfort. This is how you conquer. This is how you win. Chapter 5. How to push yourself to win in your life through uncompromising resilience. It's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get up. Let us confront the most predictable and unavoidable truth of any worthwhile endeavor. You will get knocked down. This is not a possibility. It is not a risk. It is an absolute, ironclad guarantee. You will fail. You will face setbacks that will steal the air from your lungs. You will be hit by unforeseen circumstances that will shatter your plans into a million pieces. You will be betrayed. You will be underestimated. And you will find yourself, at times, completely and utterly defeated, staring up from the cold, hard canvas of your own ambition. Now that we have established this certainty, we can get to the only part that actually matters. The world does not care that you fell. The universe does not pause to mourn your disappointment. Your victory or your defeat is not defined in the moment of impact. It is defined, with brutal and final clarity, in the moments that follow. It is defined by the answer to a single question: do you get up? Winners are not a special breed of human who glide through life on an unbroken path of success. That is a childish fantasy sold to you by those who want to keep you passive and compliant. The reality is that winners are simply those who have mastered the violent, painful, and glorious art of the bounce back. They are the ones who have been knocked down more times than the loser has even tried. They are the ones who have tasted blood, felt the sting of humiliation, and heard the chorus of doubt, yet still found the strength to place their hands on the mat, push their aching bodies upward, and stand again. Resilience is not a soft, passive quality. It is an aggressive, violent refusal to be defeated. It is the conscious decision to meet adversity with an unyielding forward pressure. It is your armor, your weapon, and your ultimate competitive advantage. When you are knocked down, your first instinct will be to stay there. The pain is real. The embarrassment is acute. A powerful, seductive voice will whisper to you, telling you to quit. It will say you are not cut out for this. It will remind you how warm and safe it is to simply lie down and accept defeat. This is the moment of truth. This is where you separate yourself from the 99%. Uncompromising resilience means you give that voice no authority. You give that feeling of defeat no time to take root. Your protocol is immediate and savage. Analyze, learn, adapt, and attack again. There is no room for wallowing. There is no time for a pity party. The moment you hit the ground, your mind must shift from feeling the pain to analyzing the cause. Analyze. Why did you fall? Be brutally honest. Did your strategy fail? Was your preparation insufficient? Did you underestimate the obstacle? Did you ignore a critical warning sign? You must perform a cold, emotionless autopsy on your failure while its memory is still fresh and raw. Do not blame circumstances. Do not blame others. Take radical ownership of the outcome. Pinpoint the specific error in judgment or execution that led to the knockdown. This is not about self-flagellation. It is about intelligence gathering. Your pain is the tuition fee for a priceless lesson. A winner ensures they get their money's worth. Learn and adapt. Once you have identified the cause, you must extract the lesson. What is the one thing this failure has taught you that will make you more effective in the next round? What new skill, what new piece of knowledge, what new strategy can you forge from the fire of this setback? Losers repeat their mistakes because they are too consumed by the emotion of failure to learn from it. Winners adapt their approach. They see failure not as a verdict on their worth, but as critical data that illuminates the path forward. They use the pain of the fall to recalibrate their aim and sharpen their attack. Attack again. Immediately. This is the most critical step. The speed of your recovery is a weapon. While others are still complaining about their fall, you must already be launching your next assault. This creates a relentless forward momentum that your obstacles and your competitors cannot withstand. Do not wait until you feel better. Do not wait for conditions to be perfect. The very act of moving forward again is what heals you. It is what rebuilds your confidence. It is the definitive statement to yourself and to the world that you are still in the fight. You push yourself to win by shortening the gap between knockdown and counterattack until it is almost non-existent. You get hit, you learn, you get up, and you hit back, harder and smarter than before.